the Ulysses, man's greatest achievement. A ship capable of traveling to distant galaxies, but a freak accident leaves the ship helpless. Its AI, damaged, dangerous, plays a deadly game with the two surviving members of the crew. If they indulge the machine's newfound passion for science fiction and fantasy trivia, it will permit limited access to the astrogation matrix and star drive. For astronauts Clive Ashenden and Rob Wickens, the choice is clear. If they ever want to see Earth again, they must define the A to Z of SFF.
A is for All You Zombies. Short story. Continue.
Ah, interesting choice. I think it's the first time we've done a short story, isn't it, Clive?
I don't know, Rob. We've been out here in space for so long. It's all blurring. But I believe you're right. Yes.
Yes. Well, it's possible that somewhere in a different continuum we have done a podcast that's nothing but short stories. But hey, here we are. As far as I'm aware,
is that the podcast where you have a pointy goatee beard and I have an eye patch?
That's the one. Yes. The mirror universe one.
Right. Yes, with evil astronaut Rob, evil astronaut Clive.
Well, could I ever be evil? I'm not sure, but who knows? Give me a goatee beard and I'll find out for sure.
Indeed. Well, this is Robert A. Heinlein's 1958 short story, published 1959.
And a pretty remarkable piece of work it is. I mean, for the time, it's a pretty remarkable piece of work. Certainly into the 21st century, it still came across as an extremely transgressive piece.
Yes, it feels, and one that sort of felt, well, certainly ahead of its time, but in terms of its construction, I'm sure at the time it felt revolutionary. It's interesting that it wasn't one of these stories that immediately got loads of awards recognition. It's just sort of built up a reputation.
Absolutely. I mean, in terms of its structure, it's very much of its time, in terms of it being two guys in a bar chatting and then something strange kind of happens, which was a fairly common construct of short science fiction of the time. But it's kind of what happens, or rather the story that comes out of this simple conversation of two blokes in a bar that makes All You Zombies quite such a special piece of work.
Indeed, yeah. It is, it's a time travel story, isn't it, I guess, which should say that this is going to be, you know, we're going to spoil the hell out of this, aren't we?
Well, I think we kind of have to, really. So, we're actually issuing a spoiler alert for a story that came out in 1958. If you have a problem with that, then take it up with Cyclomedia.
And, well, do you want to have a run at the at sort of untwisting the narrative here?
Okay, what we've basically got is a story that involves, as I mentioned before, two guys in a bar, and one guy tells the other guy, the barman, a story about his life, only it turns out that he wasn't a him initially. So it's basically a story about a guy that started as a woman and gave birth effectively to himself, for want of a better word, because she fell in love and had a fling with someone that turned out to be himself again, coming back in time as a sort of parallel timeline. So
he is his own father and mother.
He is his own father and mother. For reasons that it's effectively a recruitment thing. Is that how you read it? Because that's how I read it. He's kind of recruiting himself down the line to become a time agent and sort of.
Yes, he recruits himself. The question is, which you don't get answered in the short story, is this how all time agents are recruited, or is he special in this regard?
Indeed. I mean, there is that you could kind of wonder as to whether that actually matters, and whether what we've actually got here is a story of, well, it's basically it's Heimlich exploring that whole story about, you know, if you could go back in time and, you know, what if you made love to your grandma and what would happen and that kind of thing. So it's basically taking that whole story and kind of taking it to its logical conclusion, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's there are plenty of short stories, novels, which deal with time travel, which end up in sort of exploring the idea of time loops, where sort of the snake swallows its own tail, to kind of use the imagery from All You Zombies.
Yeah.
That it's sort of, you know, there is no ending and beginning, essentially, that... So then the question becomes one of, destiny, you know, at some point, you know, there must have been a sort of an egg before the chicken.
Yeah.
But then if it's the same chicken that lays the egg, how does that work, you know?
Exactly so. It's this really, it's one of those stories that the more you think about it, the more knotty it gets, and the more, well, twisted certainly, and more convoluted the story seems to become. You do kind of feel that there's stuff that you're not being told, really, and there's more to, certainly, to the short story that you think.
Yeah, well, I mean, they you know, it's just sort of, alludes to things like the Fizzle War, the bomb with New York's name on it that didn't go off, that the narrator, the bartender, who we later find out is every other character, sort of saved New York from, and also refers to the mistake of 72, that one is not our fault and can't be undone.
Yeah,
but doesn't explain why that is, which is interesting. I mean, I don't know about you. When did you first discover the short story? I mean, I guess what I'm saying is, were you a fan of this before you saw the film Predestination, which is the 2014 Australian adaptation?
I was. All You Zombies kind of snuck out a little bit before the whole, I guess you'd call it the sort of new world age of the, like, 1960s science fiction, that really did revel in kind of exploration and the notion of science fiction of being about more than just aliens and time travel and things like that, and kind of reveling in being slightly transgressive. You had, for example, Harlan Ellison's Dangerous Visions anthologies that really did kind of try to push the boundaries. And if All You Zombies didn't come out kind of 6-7 years before that, it would have been a perfect fit for Dangerous Visions.
Agreed, yeah.
So I kind of came to All You Zombies around the time I started reading around the whole, that sort of, that new world, Michael Moorcock, Harlan Ellison kind of deal. And, but that being said, Predestination, the 2014 version of the story, it's kind of telling that it took so long for an adaptation of that story to actually come to light, is a very good adaptation of the story. Okay, it does expand on things a little bit more, but at the same time, it's quite playful in the way it sort of expands on the themes that are touched on in the story.
It does. I mean, personally, I came to the film first, okay, and then went back and looked at the short story afterwards. And because because it obviously it's been expanded and there are various differences, then it was a kind of very different experience for me. Essentially, the main difference is that there is a whole kind of extra bit on the end of the sort of it keeps very close to the chronology that's outlined in the original short story, even to the point of sort of basing it in roughly the same time.
Mm.
However, then opens out this fizzle war, introduces a new sort of temporal core character played by Noah Taylor, yeah, who yeah. is sort of like this sort of shadowy boss man who's the only one who sort of has a handle on all the sort of timeline stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
But it introduces this idea that this mistake of 72, this sort of bomb that can't, it was actually this bomb that went off and just devastated New York. I think I'm right in saying, or at least they sort of take that idea, this event that can't be changed, and then have it be this one bomb that he couldn't stop going off, and have that that basically end up being the result of him as an old man. After he leaves the Temple Corps, then he sort of continues to travel through time, but this time he's sort of doing terrorist acts, but with the idea that these are terrorist acts that actually stop that by killing a small by killing a small amount of people, then large groups of mass amounts of people are saved.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is this sort of like an end of Watchmen idea.
Yeah, kind of, sort of.
Yeah, it also throws in this idea that if you by doing a lot of travelling through time, eventually it's sort of you lose your marbles.
Yeah, definitely.
And therefore, it's very ambiguous at the end as to whether this sort of like is whether old Ethan Hawke is like just a nutter who is just now killing people and still thinks he's doing the right thing, or if he is doing the right thing and he's just he's just come over a bit batty because he's travelled through time a lot.
Mm.
And the thing is that there's nothing that his younger self can do to undo what he does. It's sort of, it's interesting. It's an interesting, but, what really sort of lands, or makes the impression are those sort of, emotional beats that you get in the earlier part of the story. What happens to Jane, you know, the fact that, you know, having a child taken away from her, having to change sex. Mm. And then, you know, and then being recruited and discovering that this person that she's hated, this man that sort of seduced her, is in fact her, and then reliving it through the whole other side of it, and then getting taken into the temporal core, and then at a certain point having his face burned off, and then having Ethan Hawke's face put on his face. Well, the bartender's face, I should say. Yeah, see, those are the bits that really stay with you. There's kind of, I guess you would call it early 21st century thing, where it becomes a lot about stopping temporal terrorism. It's not something that's really in the short story that much. It feels much more like has that kind of Cold War concern. You know, the fizzle war reads to me in the short story as though it's like a US-Soviet Union war that they've managed to sort of stop, you know, like I turn it into a kind of, I guess, a more of a Cuban Missile Crisis thing, rather than a hot war.
Yeah, calling it a fizzle war because it kind of fizzled out, which kind of makes sense, rather than, in the film, they talk about the fizzle bomber, so basically a guy that's got a particular kind of bomb that explodes in a particular kind of way.
Yeah, which is, it's a bit of a reach, isn't it? But it's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. It is an extraordinary short story. It packs so much into, what, 3,000 words? and it's 3,000 words that still have a bite and a sting to them even now. I'm rereading it again quite recently, fortunately, considering Cyclomedia asked. I was just struck by how modern it still feels even now, considering it was written, like I say, back in 1958. You know, you're talking about the same sort of time as rock and roll was becoming big, and you've got this incredible transgressive, thoughtful piece of science fiction that's just come up, almost it feels like just come out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, it references Christine Jorgensen, but this is way before any kind of, trans person's rights movement or any kind of, the idea of someone being intersex being like a thing that was quite widely known that's a possibility. I mean, medically that's well known, but it wasn't exactly... everyday conversation in the 50s, was it?
No, exactly. It's hardly mainstream stuff. Let's not forget, this was coming from Robert Heinlein, who at the time was best known still for things like, Starship Troopers and his juvenile science fiction. So an extraordinarily sort of left-field piece of work coming from an author that was perceived to be, very much sort of establishment, sort of right wing, really.
It's interesting. I don't know. I always feel like I want to delve more into kind of what was going on with Robert A. Heinlein, because he, like you say, because he's so branded with Starship Troopers, and Starship Troopers is undeniably this kind of right wing militarist, ultra militaristic sort of novel. That's beloved of right wing conservatives, even now in the future, and hawks and so on. But you look at a lot of his other novels, like things like Stranger in a Strange Land, or Moon is a Harsh Mistress, and they have radically different kind of philosophies behind them. And then as he gets older. Even into his, it's interesting, his later novels, again, he returns to this sort of idea of a protagonist who changes gender with, Fear No Evil, I think it's called.
Yeah.
Where you have a sort of an elderly male protagonist who basically is reborn in a sort of younger woman's body, but he shares his brain with her disembodied consciousness. If you see what I mean, idea of sexual identity being fluid. I think reads as being slightly dated now, but it goes to show that it was something that he was thinking about,
just kind of pushing the boundaries of kind of acceptable thought in science fiction magazines that were at the time certainly really not that open to that kind of radical sort of discussions of gender and things like that. So absolutely fascinating.
Well, I find it interesting wasn't All You Zombies initially submitted to Playboy and rejected?
Is this right? Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Which is interesting that something. This girly mag would feel threatened by something which sort of took one assumes largely male readership and then sort of put it in the shoes of someone who's switched gender. That's incredibly subversive. You almost want to sort of put some kind of impish kind of sort of desire to mess with them, on the author was part there. But I'm not sure that we got any evidence for that. But
no, exactly. You kind of like to think so, yeah. Though.
Yeah.
So on that note, then, we absolutely love All You Zombies, and we think if there's anyone out there listening to this who's into transgressive, thoughtful science fiction, this is one to look at, definitely. Sci-Fi Media, do you think we've given it enough of a nose round?
If alas you do succeed, never try again.
Is that a yes?
Oh, systems are coming online.
That must be a yes, then.
I think I said yes.
Jolly good. Oh, I do love it when he gets cryptic. Okay, fire her up, Clive. Let's move on out here.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, punch it.
And we're off.
The A to Z of SFF was written and performed by Rob Wickings and Clive Ashenden. The show was produced and edited by Rob Wickings at All Hallows Post of Reading, the finest sound available anywhere. Would you like to know more? Go to www.theatozofsff.com. Like us on Facebook as The A to Z of SFF, or follow us on Twitter at The A to Z of SFF.